I think before we start, we're all Chelsea fans here. We all have our own opinions. We all have our own feelings towards what's been going on, and we'll just have to respect and agree to disagree with whatever we say. I think that should be stressed.
Except for you and me, Collins.
Yeah, no, you can fuck right off, Matt.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's only fitting to start this episode off just with a big, deep sigh, because, oh man.
Oh, you are teeing this up so good.
Enzo, to me, looks like a more agile, basically a young Chess Fabregas.
A Rolls Royce, man. Gotta sell it.
Messi is the Jorginho of international football. That was a dumb take.
Welcome to another episode of the Flag Stays Down podcast. But it's what we'll call a cup edition this week. Carabao Cup and FA Cup fixtures. Finally back to the Premier League for this upcoming week. But I would say a mixed bag this week. Before we get into all of that, we got a full house. We got Parker. We got Matt. Parker, how you doing?
Good. I had a good weekend. And I had a pretty good week. All in all. So yeah, not too bad, guys. I got to spend a little bit of time in Tampa. So I used to like look forward to Tampa in February because you would get drastically warmer weather. It was not drastically warmer than my Colorado winter has been. So it was a little interesting there, but definitely had a lot more humidity in the air. So I spent a couple of days in Tampa, and then I got back. My wife was on the road, and then I took off Friday for the match and just had a bro weekend with me and my two dogs. So got a lot of household projects done, got to work on my own pace and my own schedule, which is always fun. It was productive and lazy all at the same time. So it was not a ton to report, but a lot of good stuff. The other fun thing in my life is going to the Bucks Nuggets game tomorrow. So excited about that. When I got the calendar and I got the schedule, the Bucks are in town exactly once. They play each other twice, one home, one away. And so originally I was supposed to be gone this weekend. I was supposed to be out of town. And so I completely wrote the game off, and work plans have changed. So I'll take the wife to that tomorrow. So that'll be a good time. I think I have to wear the Bucks gear, right? Like it sucks because I do live here and I do cheer for the Nuggets, but I am Wisconsin through and through, so gotta cheer for my hometown Bucks.
You get to see Doc Rivers' first game.
I do get to see Doc Rivers some shake up there in Milwaukee, so that'll be fun. Matt, how are you doing, man? How was your weekend?
It was okay. I was up in Appleton. For the weekend, celebrating my sister-in-law's 30th birthday. So we packed up the family, went up to Appleton and just kind of hung out, went out to dinner, did some ice skating at Lambeau. I did not ice skate because one fall and my body would not survive that. I enjoyed watching everybody else just fall and slip, and it was quite comical. But yeah, I came back today and then just did a bunch of stuff around the house, some laundry and whatnot, just trying to recover from what was a rough work week, and it's not getting any better. So just mentally preparing for everything that's going to be coming over the next few months. But aside from that, it's Sunday night. Everybody's here. All's good. Collins, how was your weekend?
It was a little bit of everything. Went down to Chicago with the fam Saturday and hung out, check out the museums, stuff like that. Today My wife tasked me with putting together some IKEA furniture, which was literally an all-day event. I am declaring war on the country of Sweden. They send us nothing but garbage. IKEA, Graham Potter, Swedish meatballs. The only good thing is Zlatan, but he's not even really Swedish. He's Croatian or something like that. So, yeah, Sweden is done on this pod. They are banned. There's an embargo. I apologize to our Swedish listeners.
Man of the get the fuck out of here. Automatic award.
Right? All right. Well, we do have a busy week to cover here. We had Carabao Cup thrashing, we'll say 6-1 against Middlesbrough on Tuesday. And then a quick turnaround, 0-0 draw in the FA Cup, forcing a replay with Aston Villa. We'll start with that Burrow match because that was definitely the more exciting out of the two. Like I said, 6 goals out of Chelsea, which is, God, the most that I can recall in a long time from this club. An own goal, Enzo, De Sassi, Palmer with 2, and Noni Madueke to close it out. Matt, we'll start with you on this one. What are your takeaways from the Carabao Cup second leg?
We handled business. I think that's the biggest thing, right? We've always talked about this. We're the better team on paper, but would we actually show it on the pitch? The first leg, not quite. Second leg, we came out like we needed to. The fact that we got out on them early, I think, was the biggest thing. Regardless if it was an own goal or not, we were creating a ton of chances. So I was very happy to see that we were on the front foot right away. The high press, the fact that it worked finally, was a breath of fresh air. Going up against a team like that, you know, it forced a lot of errors. So I was happy to see, you know, the ability for the team to kind of capitalize on some of those chances. But I mean, if you were to, again, if you looked at the matchup on paper, 6-1 was probably what you would expect. Just a dominant performance, definitely on the score sheet. But again, we came in, handled business. That's what we needed to do.
Yeah. They took care of it, man. It was great to see us respond after going down 1-0. I always look at these as 2 legs, so I didn't look at the first leg as a loss. I looked at it as we were losing after 90 minutes, which is fine, but it's obviously not ideal. I think if you score 3 goals against a Matt Burrow, like it's done, right? Like you just kind of put that away and put it to rest, and none of us knew what the outcome was going to be when we, you know, flipped the match on Tuesday. So Matt, to your point, the fact that we came out early, came out often and finished, really emphasized the point there, really kind of took care of business. I was shocked as I was tracking the match. I was at a work conference. I was tracking the match and I'm just like, oh shit, goal. Oh, goal. Hey, guess what? Goal. This is awesome. Like just goal after goal after goal. Seemed like, and a lot of them came after, you know, quick turnovers and turnovers that led to really quick goals, which was really positive to see. I was happy to see De Sassi get on the sheet. We have criticized him at his right back as not getting forward, and he definitely got forward. I think some of that is the opposition we played, but I was happy to see him be more of a threat than we've seen him in prior matches. Cole Palmer creates his own luck, I think, a lot in games where he anticipates better than anyone I've seen in the past couple of years, where he's playing high press ball and he's guessing where people are going and he's kind of reading their mind a little bit. He reminds me a little bit of my little brother who I used to play FIFA against growing up. And admittedly, he's better at the game than I am. And he would, you know, pick my pocket more times than I would love to admit. And he would kind of read my mind a little bit of where I was going to go. Feels like that with Cole Palmer, where he kind of knows how to feint into baiting people into doing what he wants them to do and then kind of biting on it. So to see him on the score sheet, and I don't want to be too negative here, but you score 6 goals and your striker who needs to get goals for his name doesn't end up on the score sheet. I know the own goal was, you know, his doing, really, where the ball came to his feet and the defender kind of had a heavy touch stealing it from him to score the goal. But it doesn't do you any favors when your team scores six and you don't end up on the score sheet and you're fighting for your life. So Broya is definitely not doing anything to impress us at this stage, at least me. He's not creating, he's not finishing, he's not, he just feels like the broken piece of this clock. And it's a little sad to see, because even if he scored two, we'd be like, yeah, but look, it's Burrow. And it's like, he doesn't score any against Burrow. That's even, it's even more kind of spotlight on him a little bit. So with the recent Osimhen has picked his club news that hit the presses a few days ago, I won't be too sad to see him go.
Yeah, no, talking about Broya, he was another dud for me yet again. Gosh, what were the numbers that were floated around this week? 40 mil for him, 35 mil, something like that. Take that in a heartbeat. I don't even care if we have a backup for him. Play a false nine. Play with 10 men. That's what Broya brings to the table for me. Once again, unimpressed. And it's now a big enough sample size, at least I would say, in this season. He's got over 600 minutes and averages less than a shot on goal per game. With two goals, I think he has this year. So goal every 300 minutes, that's not great. But I do want to give credit to someone who I have ripped in the past. And now, granted, as you know, Parker, as you said, with this being the opposition that it is, you can take it or leave it. But Levi Colwell looked serviceable as a left center back. And you know, he had been chipping in about a goal a game against us for a long time at left back, looked confused, looked out of position, which he was. Didn't look like he knew how to defend. Looked decent against Middlesbrough. Not as many chances against him, right? Because it is the opposition that it is. But didn't look great. Or did look, I would say, fairly great. Somebody who didn't look great was Mihailo Mudryk. And this is one that I'm curious on with you guys on. Mudryk was on that little bit of a tear, 3-4 games, where he was just tearing it up, looking great. Looking like exactly what we paid for, and then rides the bench for 3 or 4 games. And so to me, this was like, well, yeah, he looks like shit because he's a form player. He's exactly like Christian Pulisic. He needs consistent minutes to get that form. And we're seeing that now with Pulisic at AC Milan. But Mudryk is not somebody who you can just swap in and out, you know, for 3 or 4 game stretches, at least in my opinion, because then you get shit like this, and he's basically building from the bottom up yet again.
Yeah, he did not have a great game. It's a nice way of putting it. Almost seemed like kind of going through the motions, like only wanted to turn on the Jets if he knew that there was like a legitimate opportunity. He could easily torch the Middlesbrough back line. Like, it wasn't even a question. His trying to weave through people one-on-one, not knowing defenders were coming like behind or anywhere near, like a lot of possession given up, which we don't like to see at all. The whole stuff about him and Enzo and how that whole thing shook out, basically like Enzo like yelling at him and stuff throughout the match, him being yanked at half, like it's not a good look. But I agree, he's somebody who needs consistent reps, right? He's not a plug and play type of player. He's somebody that needs to be involved in the match. He can't just come off the bench as, you know, a super sub or anything like that and immediately just be the guy. Like, that's just not what he does. He needs to need some time to get into the game and get involved and kind of adjust and things like that. But yeah, it was not his best outing, which is unfortunate to see.
I've been so hot cold on him this year, and I haven't made up my mind. And I think what was so hard for me to make up my mind, like, my gut always told me, like, that he wasn't going to be it and that he wasn't going to be right for us. But, like, I saw what everyone sees. I saw the moments. I saw the potential and all of those things. And, like, that's where I was, like, really reserved and making judgment. Talk about sample size. We've seen Mudryk more than we've seen Broya. He's played more minutes. He's played featured in more matches. And he's not good enough to show up for 8-10 minutes in a match and have those outings where he disappears for 60 minutes, he disappears for 75 minutes, and then shows up for 1-2 moments. Like, he's not good enough. He's not clinical enough. He's not explosive enough. He doesn't change the game enough for him to be just that. And I think, self-included here, trust me, I take blame on this as well. I think we all make excuses for him. I think we all say things like, needs consistent reps, needs this, needs that, needs to be featured more, needs to be on the same page. And I find myself making excuses for why he's not doing well. And then I kind of go back to, like, my initial gut reaction of, like, he's just not going to be it for us. And I'm not ready to write it off 100% yet, but, like, I'm leaning closer and closer to that feeling where, we're seeing consistent development out of a lot of players, and we're seeing people improve and people gel, and he's still not doing it with us. And he's definitely on the replaceable list for me right now, just because we've seen him start, we've seen him sub, we've seen him 3 games in a row, we've seen him come off of runs of form, and we don't have good enough. We don't have Chelsea level yet for me to be sold on him. That pains me to say. I don't love it, but that's where I'm at.
So I don't think we're bringing anybody in here in January. It looks like it's going to be a very quiet January for us. So come summer, I mean, he's under contract for 6 more years. Do you send him out on a loan to get those consistent minutes?
Depends if we bring someone in, I think. If we bring in someone better, yes, because he is under contract. I just don't know, like, I don't know what that helps us, really, because, like, he had consistent minutes with, like, the Ukraine national team, and he did great for the Ukraine national team where he's played with those guys forever. I just don't know if it's going to translate into success with us.
I think, you know, right now we do not have the depth. So I think, yeah, if we're going to bring a winger in, you know, then maybe his name's out there. And, you know, got to remember Angelo is going to be coming back at the end of the year, who's been not necessarily tearing it up in France, but rave reviews in France. With him at the right, no one's going to want Sterling's wages. So I think that pushes Sterling back out to the left. All right, well, we did have one other match this week, kind of in quick-fire succession here. Go from scoring 6 goals to not scoring or conceding against Villa at home on 3 days' rest. So we've got a fourth-round replay coming up in February here against Villa. So, boys, who wants to start here? What are your takeaways from the Villa match?
Parks, I'll let you start since you actually watched the match.
Sure. I think more positives than negatives in this draw. Big negative for me is we have a congested January and February match day schedule, and adding another game against a top 4 team, I don't love that. So I wanted a result one way or the other. But when I take a step back and just when I, like, kind of review this season in total, Villa's in fourth in the Premier League, and Villa did not rest people in this match. They had more rest than we did, but they did not, you know, have a B squad out there, which I love. I love FA Cup fourth round matchups where people go at it, right? They or fifth round, whatever we're in, you know, where they, it's a big match and you take it seriously. And I don't think everyone has taken the FA Cup seriously historically. And to see, you know, two teams kind of go at it is a good thing. I thought we looked great at times and I thought we looked meh at times, but I mean, all things considered, we're in ninth place. We haven't played our best consistently throughout the season. We've looked a lot worse against a lot worse. And, you know, we went up against a big team and played them really well. And I think neutrals probably left thinking that Chelsea was in fourth and that Villa were in ninth. If you watch that match without knowing, you know, standings, I think most people would have thought Chelsea would have been the better team, or at least, you know, historically the better team. So there was a lot of like moral wins. One of the things we discussed pre-pod was the fact that, you know, our high press worked and we were able to cause some turnovers, cause a little bit of chaos to Villa, but we weren't able to convert those chances, the same chances that we had against Middlesbrough. So that was frustrating. Emi Martinez loves to play his best fucking match of the year against Chelsea every time we play him. He's one of the most frustrating like keepers because he is a bit of that sweeper keeper. They play a high line. He does come out a lot and he's good at it. Like, he's fucking good at it. And he more than once, right, comes out and clears balls. And you're like, man, like we were in, right? We were in on him. When we're in on him, he makes saves. He made a couple of snap saves against us. He closes down space really well. And we weren't able to find it. So it sucks that we, you know, have to turn around and go over there, play an away leg in the cup replay. Doesn't bode well for us. But the fact that we're still holding our own against top four clubs makes me happy. And it makes me, you know, realize how far we've come in this season and that, you know, things are looking a lot brighter than I think a lot of fans give them credit for. A lot of fans look at the past 4, 5, 6, 7 matches and be like, yeah, cool, we've gotten some results, but we should be getting those results because they're not against the best opposition. And while some of that's true, to quote Scott from last week, can't control who you play against, right? You can only control what's up against you that day. And we played Villa and we looked good. So like, here we go. You know, we are building momentum. We are a team that a lot of teams don't really want to play right now because we have a lot of good things going for us. So a lot of positives I left, you know, watching that match.
Yeah, you hit pretty much everything. You know, it's almost like, you know, we blew our load a little bit too much against Burrow. Like, we didn't need 6. 3 would have sufficed. Could have saved some for Villa. Like, you didn't need to go that hard on them. But it's, again, you score 6, you can't be mad about it. Yeah, it's a good moral win. Obviously, not on the actual game sheet. But again, it's about building momentum. And I think that's what we've talked about with like this whole project is how do we see this season being successful? And we're seeing collective growth, at least over the last month and a half, we're starting to see more of that. And not necessarily doesn't matter who we play, right? Like, as long as you see it consistently, and I think we're starting to hit that point. You know, I'll keep talking about the high press because I've always been extremely disappointed at the fact that every other team can press us, but whenever we try to press, it is the most disappointing thing in the world because everybody breaks it so quick. The fact that we were able to put something efficient together, I think speaks volumes to where this team is, as far as that growth journey so far. But you know, nobody wants a replay in the FA Cup. Like, you ask any team, I don't think anybody wants a replay. It's just another match, almost unnecessary match, right? If you, regardless if you win or lose, right, it's done. But yeah, just little added schedule congestion, especially with the rough kind of second half that we have. But you know, a lot of these kids that we have, you know, we can call them kids because, well, we're like at least 10 years older than they are. They got to learn, right? Like, it's not, okay, you play one tough team and then you can kind of coast for a little bit. Then you have another tough team. Then you can kind of let, no, like, this is a Premier League. You were going against everybody. So I think we're going to find out even more. I know we had the rough stretch kind of in the middle of the first part of the season. We learned a lot. I think we're going to learn even more in this stretch. See what this team is made of now that we have kind of started building this momentum. You know, can we keep it going, right? We're going to have highs and lows during this stretch. Can we continue to grow as a team? So that's the part that I'm looking forward to the most, to see just kind of what transpires.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, as you guys both hit on here, it looks better than how it felt in real time. I would say it projects better, right? Holding our own against top four teams, press looks good for the first time in however many years. Now, you know, I think they need to keep working on that press because we were dog-legged come what, about the 70th minute. Just holding on for dear life at that point. So if you're going to do that, you need to be clinical. And so my biggest takeaway from this is we are a striker away from being a top four team. I like Nico Jackson. I like what he does. He puts away chances. I told you guys pre-pod, you know, I'm not going to touch on it again, but I will. His conversion stats are some of the better in England and in Europe. So he converts chances. It's just that he has so many chances that we look at it and we're like, oh my gosh, he's missing so many. We really need him back from AFCON. We need Senegal to lose here at AFCON and get Nico back. But I will say I am intrigued at what Villa is going to do with this replay. You know, they're fighting for a top four spot, and it's three teams right now on 43 points, and Spurs, I think, are behind Villa on 40 points. Well, you look at their fixture list, and you know this game is going to be played on Wednesday the 7th. That's sandwiched between Saturday game away to Sheffield, which, you know, you could probably rest players there. But do you want to play a first team in the FA Cup against Chelsea when you have Manchester United on the weekend? Us, on the other hand, we have Wolves and Palace, as the bread to our FA Cup sandwich here. So I doubt we're going to rest people because we don't have people, but I think we should be in a better position, you know, prioritizing this match, whereas Villa may look towards the league instead, looking towards Champions League football, which next year with Victor Osimhen, we'll be in those shoes too. All right. Well, boys, our next match, we finally have the Premier League back. We have a weekend match back. We haven't had a weekend match in a minute here. I know Joe's been missing us at Highbury. So Matt, you and I might need to make a guest appearance. Oh no, you know, this game's on Wednesday. Sorry.
We do play Sunday though.
Yeah, we do play Sunday against Wolves. Getting my fixtures mixed up here, but we do have Liverpool away, which will be a nice little tune-up for the Carabao Cup final at the end of February. But this is Jurgen Klopp's first Premier League match since his announcement that he'll be leaving Liverpool at the end of the year. Now, Jurgen Klopp is a guy that we referenced several times in our various manager hirings. Him and, you know, Sir Alex and Arteta and all of them. But Jurgen Klopp being kind of the pinnacle of that. He's been at the club for about a decade now. And I won't save the closing thoughts for the end of the pod. I'll use it right now. Any closing thoughts on Jurgen Klopp from you guys?
Great teeth.
some of England's best dental work was done on that man.
Is that it?
That's all I got.
Oh man. We've talked about it just about how Chelsea's been a bit more chaotic in the Klopp era and have won just as much as Liverpool have. But I still think like Jurgen Klopp is still what you strive for in a manager. And I think the give and the take of that relationship between the community and the team and the manager is something cool. And so I think I still strive for that. Like there hasn't been a manager that I've called proper Chelsea for a while now, and I'm still kind of waiting for that to be fleshed out. I jokingly said before the podcast started that you got to make it 18 months before you can make it 10 years. So I don't think many people have had that opportunity in recent time, but like, having like, I'll just say the special one, having a special manager, and one of ours has been called the special one. Having one of those is always fun, and it makes for a fun time. And when you're have some success to back that up, and you are able to win big things, it's a good time for your club. So when everyone's winning, everyone's happy. Winning cures all. Jurgen Klopp has done a lot for that team to kind of rejuvenate the club. So characters in the Premier League will always be missed. Jurgen Klopp never held anything back for an interview, and he was always an interesting one to hear his thoughts and whatnot. So he, it's a tough loss for Liverpool and tough loss for the Premier League. I'm kind of pissed off at the timing of it because, we talk about the new manager bump. I think playing Liverpool at Liverpool, first Premier League match back, like, you can't write the script any better. So it'll be fun to try to play spoiler on that one. I know Jose Mourinho talked about Arsene Wenger's 1,000th match and how he walked in there and kicked the shit out of him. So hopefully we can play spoiler a little bit to their festivities and show them what we're made of, and that we're not going to be a walkover on that one. But if we play them in the Premier League, and then a month later, I think something like that, we play them in the League Cup final, which will be chance to win silverware for him as well on his way out. So there'll be some big matches against Liverpool. Collins, I think you said it last week. We always play them tough, and we've been neck and neck with them the past 2-3 seasons, like just within an inch of each other. And so they've gotten the better of us in recent history. So I'm hoping that we can edge them out a little bit.
Yeah, I haven't been too impressed with Liverpool this year. They never seem to play at their best until the last 10 minutes of every single game. So I think a win is there for the taking, not only in the Carabao Cup, but on Wednesday, even at Anfield. I think 3 points is certainly attainable. And Jurgen Klopp, our buddy Joe Mach is going to hate this, but Jurgen Klopp is a giant turd. I have no respect for the guy. And I understand he's been there for 10 years and he's an honorary scouse and all that. But this is the same guy who got a referee banned from officiating any Liverpool matches because he threatened, he wanted a replay. He's been bitching every single year about congestion of the fixture list, the same congestion that everyone has to deal with. So it's not like Liverpool's at a disadvantage there. One time he complained so much about it that he fielded his U18 team in a cup match because he didn't want to risk any of his players and to send a message to the FA. He's an argumentative prick is what I will say. Now, granted, if he was Chelsea's manager for 10 years, I would probably have a different opinion. But Liverpool is a club that I just don't like. I'm happy to see him go. And honestly, I'm happy because what that means is the 10 years that he has built up here. I don't know who's going to step in to carry that on, but Mo Salah will probably be gone. I'd imagine Trent is going to be out the door. But as well as some others that, you know, Virgil van Dijk will probably be gone. There's going to be a change at Liverpool. And is FSG going to want to spend the money to back whatever new manager? I don't know. But I think this is, I said this a few weeks ago. Chelsea are planning this out. Chelsea are, to switch it back to our focus here, Chelsea are planning this out. Liverpool are at the end of their prime here. City are going to enter theirs in the next 2 years if they're not relegated. You know, Arsenal is probably at their peak right now. Manchester United is on another fucking continent at this point. We have a team now that can ascend into those positions and take, I will say, what is ours. So I'm happy to see Jurgen Klopp go for more than one reason. Him and the Swedes.
So, in all honesty, I actually don't mind Jurgen Klopp. I never really have. He is who he is, right? He doesn't shy away from anything. You can tell, even when he was coaching at Dortmund, like, he loves his team. He loves his players, regardless of who he's managing. He'll give everything he has for that. I completely respect that. That's just who he is as a person. He'll give whatever he can to back his team and support his team. I'm all for it. Park, you said it great. It's tough losing a personality, and he is a personality to the nth degree. His touchline celebrations are of legendary lore. All the just quirky shit that he does, like, I'm okay with it. I like it. Again, Collins, like you said, if he was Chelsea manager, it'd probably be a lot different. You know, he'd probably be ranting and raving, but obviously it's Liverpool. So I respect him as a manager. I'm fine with his antics or whatever you want to call him. He's trying to stand by his team and defend his team. If he has to be the person that takes the brunt of it, so be it. But I don't mind that. I think now we're in such a revolving door of managers in this sport that, you know, you have to, in my opinion, you have to show some appreciation for the people that have been at clubs for extended periods. And he's one of those people. And obviously he kind of started this whole rebuilding, brought over this Gegenpressing style of football to the Premier League. And we're seeing more and more of that nowadays. So I think some of that's attributed to him. But, you know, good for Liverpool. Like, I don't think they would be in this, like, recognizable, so to speak, or as top tier of a club that they have been over the last decade without him.
Well, let me ask you this, because you guys have mentioned stability here but, you know, quite a few times. Parker, you mentioned that Liverpool have won the same amount of trophies, pretty much the exact same trophies that we have in the time that Jurgen Klopp has been at Liverpool. We've had, oh gosh, I don't even want to go back and count. I think he came on when we had Jose the second time, 2015. So Jose, Goose, Conte, Sarri, Lampard, Tuchel, Potter, Bruno, Lampard, Pochettino. Does stability pay off then? Because we've had 7,000 managers and, you know, just some random people we picked up off the street to manage this club and still won the same amount of trophies. What's the incentive to back a coach for 10 years?
We had this debate when looking for managers, and the only argument I can make is that we don't necessarily know that shotgunning managers is going to breed success in the future. We know that it has yielded success in the past, and we can point to that, and we can look at that and say new manager bumps and you know, be quick on the trigger. I don't know necessarily if that means the next 10 years looking forward, if that's the right strategy or not. So it's really hard to say when you, because everyone but City has gone through people and figured things out and won or not won, right? Like everyone feels like City's kind of dominated the presses and the headlines, and the rest of us are fighting for the scraps that they don't pick up. But it's a tough one. I think for my emotional state, I would much rather stability, and less than the stability, I believe in like having like kind of clear defined expectations and styles that you can kind of start fresh and then kind of like foresee future. Because, you know, when I look at our team as the youngest team in the Premier League, we are clearly building something for the future, and trying to build a style that works for today and 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So if we find the right coach to manage that, I want to stick with it, because it's part of that like growing in with each other kind of momentum. And then if it works, kind of continue with it. It's too early to say if we have that right now. So I don't know if Poch is the perfect guy for that, or if the talent is developed and he has done his job in developing said talent, get someone else to take us to the next level. Like maybe you can make an argument for that, but like, I'll say it this way. If we have 8 managers in the next 10 years, I don't think we have a ton of success as a club. I find it hard to believe that we can kind of work in that paradigm of having a ton of success where we're consistent competing for Premier League titles, for Champions League titles, and others. So I don't think we'll have that like long-standing success without a stable manager, because you can look at Pep as the other side of consistency and stability and say, well, it worked for them. And I think you need more than a consistent manager. You need a consistent system and players and a few other things with it. But I think we are going to struggle if we keep firing managers really quickly.
Just to add to that point, you know, if you look at Liverpool over the last decade, they have been challenging, if not damn near winning the Premier League with Man City. Like, that is consistency. That's what you pay for. You might not win it, but you are there, right? Like, you have a very good shot of being there as being one of the top clubs in the Premier League. You know, I think you brought this up about with Villa, like, are they going to prioritize top four, or are they going to prioritize, you know, the FA Cup? Well, when you're Liverpool, you're going to prioritize the Champions League, right? If you make it that far, you're going to prioritize the Champions League over everything, right? The domestic cups kind of pale in comparison to that. And if you're in a title race, a close one with City, like, you're going to look at both of those as your top priorities, then everything else just kind of falters off a little bit. I think if you run the same sort of revolving door of managers that Chelsea has historically done with a young team that you are still trying to develop, you are going to run into a ton of problems, because there's no consistency behind that, right? You bring in a new manager, okay, different style. A year later, brand new manager, different style. Are these players actually growing, or are you just trying to reteach them stuff and they can't actually develop that way? They're just in this constant mode of trying to play catch up all the time. To me, I think the reason why it's worked in the past with Chelsea is because you have had experienced players out there on the pitch. We don't really have that with Chelsea right now, right? We talk about the youngest team. We have granddad himself out there, Thiago Silva at center back. Like, and then who's your next most experienced? Chilwell, Reese, like that's kind of what you got. I think that only works, and that only has worked, with experienced players that already know their style and the manager can adjust to their style. If you start bringing in new managers, you're going to have new managers that, because the players are so young, they're going to want to implement their style on them, which is not always going to be the best case scenario for all parties involved. So as the current state of Chelsea, I think you need stability. And remember, even when Klopp took over, like, it was rough a little bit for Liverpool. Like, it wasn't great, but they've been in contention for the Premier League title and been a favorite, or one of the favorites for Champions League pretty consistently throughout that era. So I think for Chelsea's sake, you need to keep some sort of consistency around, whether that's 18 months, whether that's 2-3 years. I don't think you can run a 6 month to a year revolving door with this young of a squad.
That's all fair, especially with the young team here. Just, and this again is just my dislike of Liverpool, but the great Ricky Bobby, if you're not first, you're last, and they were not first very often. So
quick question for you guys. Liverpool are sitting on 48 points. They're 5 clear of City. I know there's a game in hand there, but do you think Liverpool hangs on in Klopp's last year to win the league, or do you think, City, Arsenal, Villa, they're all sitting on 43 points right now? I know we have a good amount of games left here, so does someone catch Liverpool?
There's part of me that says no, because City, we know City. They're going to go on this second half run where they're going to go unbeaten in their last 18 games or 17 games, however many they have left here. But the other part of me, just knowing the Premier League, knowing the officiating in the Premier League and how weird the Premier League is, the script writers want him to hold on, which makes me nervous for the Carabao Cup final as well. I don't know. I'm torn.
I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, I can see it both ways. The big thing for me, and Parker, I know you brought this up, but the flow that KDB has since coming back, that is tough to stop. But like, all jokes aside, like, him coming back is huge for that team. We've already seen the impact in just the couple games that he has been back. Like, when he first came back, I was watching the match, 5 minutes, scores a goal and has an assist. Like, just ridiculous. Him coming back is crucial for City's success if they do want to make this run in the second half of the season. I can see Liverpool kind of giving that up. But, Collins, as you mentioned, the Premier League script writers are one of a kind. So I could definitely see that playing out too. My initial thought is that I think Liverpool hangs on. They end up winning the league by 2 points.
I would be shocked if City doesn't win. I think just the model of consistency that they've shown and getting to Bruno back, they've played most of this year without him, and they're still within striking distance. If they were 10 points back, different story, but they're 5 points back with a game in hand. So effectively 2 points back on an even pegging. So they're definitely within striking distance. And I think that they, tighten the screws, Collins. They have the ability to go on those runs that people drop points and they just don't like to. So I think City catches them. I don't think Arsenal is going to be in the conversation. I don't think Villa is going to be in the conversation when it comes down to it. But I think City catches them and wins. I'm going to say comfortably. I'm going to say like +5. Not a last day win.
Well, talking about City, last segment here, debate going on in the world of X right now of who has the better academy in England right now, Manchester City or Chelsea. So we all know the Chelsea names, right? Reece James, Mason Mount, Declan Rice, Tomori, Ake, Christensen, Mark Gahey, Conor Gallagher, Jamal Musiala, among others. Alfie Gilchrist, Armando Broya. Don't throw him in that list. But you throw that up against City and their recent success. Phil Foden, got Cole Palmer, Oscar Bob, Pedro Porro, Rico Lewis, Emmanuel Frimpong, Kieran Trippier, Jadon Sancho, Adrian Rabiot, and Brahim Diaz. What, you know, just picking up blind here based on those names, who's got the better academy?
I think you got to go Chelsea. And I think the only reason why it's somewhat of a discussion today is due to form and injury. Like, I think Cole Palmer's form recently has been outstanding. If you rewind the clock 6 months before he signs for Chelsea, no one's saying, you know, Cole Palmer's name in that discussion. And then on the other side, like, you know, Reece James has often been talked about as one of the best right backs, if not the best right back or right wing back in the world. And the fact that he hasn't been able to showcase talent, people forget pretty quickly about, you know, just how impactful and how good he is. And so I know I'm just picking two names off that list to kind of highlight and talk about, but if you go back further than that list, Chelsea's been more consistent in producing talent. They've been one of the best academies in the world. And you know, I think a lot of folks that have gone through the academy have had success elsewhere. And a lot of Chelsea rejects aren't necessarily rejects, even throwing the De Bruyne is in the Mo Salahs of the list. I know they're not academy kids, but like people who've come through our system that Chelsea get rid of have proven to be successful in other places. And I think we have a greater history of that than other clubs do. So that list, it's relatively tight, but I still give the nod to Chelsea, just list over list. And then going back history wise, it's Chelsea all day.
I think, to your point, Parker, I think City's is almost too recent. You hit it right on the head. There's no like historical significance to it. It's all since like the Saudi money came in, right? Rico Lewis, Oscar Bob. First of all, great name, strong English name, Oscar Bob. They're not proven yet. They're still kids, right? Like, I wouldn't put them in like the name of people that we've mentioned. Obviously, I'm sure that there are others, right? But like, I wouldn't put them as like great products yet. Like, yeah, they're playing for the first team at City, but as subs, maybe make a cameo appearance in like the 87th minute. That's about it, right? Good things are talked about, but I mean, the biggest one that stands out for me is Phil Foden. I mean, Jadon Sancho, yeah, he was a good talent, and we saw how things very quickly fizzled out for him. I think if you look at our list, our players can kind of play anywhere. And, you know, it kind of broadens the scope of our academy as far as, yes, we can play, like, these players will find success wherever they go. Where if you look at cities, it's like kind of very specific where these people will succeed. So that being said, I give the nod to Chelsea on that one.
Yeah, I'm also going Chelsea, but I do think it's funny that these are two clubs that don't really utilize their academies a whole ton. It's more of a money-making thing. And I look at cities specifically. Brahim Diaz sold off to Real Madrid. Rabiot, did you go to PSG first? PSG and then Juve. Sancho sold off to Dortmund. Lavia sent off to Southampton before us. Palmer to us. Pedro Porro's out the door. So really it's Rico Lewis and Phil Foden for them. But then you turn around if we're going off list specific and, you know, Mason Mount is on ours. not great, but definitely a moneymaker there. It's an interesting debate, but it just looking at the history of the two academies, City has a long way to go. I'd give it another 5 years to evaluate where a lot of these players went. Whereas you look at the players that were on our list there, and really the only young one is Musiala. All these other guys are in their prime. Christensen, Ake, Declan Rice, Fikayo Tomori. Yeah, it's not really a fair comparison at the moment. It's basically, you know, playing a U23 team in the Premier League and playing a team of seasoned veterans, which is the exact opposite of how things have played out right now. All right. Well, we did have we had two polls, but we'll skip the man and get the fuck out of here. It was not our best poll, I will say. But our man of the match poll comes this week from the Aston Villa game. So who's your man of the match? Petrovic, Caicedo, Gallagher, or Palmer?
Parks, I'll let you take that one.
I was split on this one. I really liked Caicedo and the match that he played. He was really, really great. And to be honest, I don't remember how I voted in the poll, but Petrovic had a great game. We didn't talk about it when we highlighted the match. He had a great game. He played really, really well. I think rare that you have two goalies that kind of stand out as some of the best players on the pitch for both teams. But Petrovic did well. And I think we did well to get out of there 0-0, especially towards the end of that match, where Villa was able to apply a little bit more pressure. Seems to be our MO, right? Kind of dominate for 70 minutes and then have the ability to let up off the gas and let in goals late. And so the fact that we get out 0-0, I think I said it to you guys, and it was like the 86th, 87th minute when I was watching the match. Didn't feel like we were scoring. It felt like it was going to be either a draw or a loss. And so I had that spidey sense kind of tingling a little bit where felt like it was right for giving up. And Petrovic was able to keep it together, and we were able to get by with a draw. So I'll go with him.
I will second that.
Yeah, I was torn between him and Caicedo. I just struggle sometimes with giving the award to keepers unless they, you know, Kepa saves us in a penalty shootout. So I went Caicedo on this one, just more action, I'll say, than what Petrovic had in the match. But you guys are men of the people. Jordy with 43% of the vote, Caicedo in second with 27, Gallagher at 19, and Palmer at 11. Then on to our very last poll, which, if we get past Aston Villa, becomes relevant. Who do you want out of the draw? We get drawn against the winner of Plymouth and Plymouth Argyle and Leeds United. Who do you boys want?
Give me Leeds.
I want Plymouth Argyle strictly so we can see more Argyle sponsorship at Stamford Bridge. I think it's just written perfectly.
What if it was Leeds Hilton?
Send them all.
Yeah, I want Leeds. Just the rivalry there is too important. And honestly, if we can shit on them, I'll be happy. So Leeds, the winner at 63%, Plymouth at 37%. So make sure to check out our polls and give us a follow on X. We're at @FlagDownPod. Boys, any closing thoughts here?
Here's the saying, I can't wait for Nico Jackson to return.
We're better than we were.
All right. Well, like I said, make sure to follow us on social media at @FlagDownPod. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review. If you're on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button. We're all over the place now. Just a reminder, Google Podcasts is going away. So if you are on there, make sure to check us out on another streaming platform. Boys, it's been an up and down week. Looking forward to a good one here with Liverpool midweek. Hopefully Nico Jackson returns. As Matt said, I don't know if we're better than we were. So it was. Did I get it? Did I get it this week?
You did. You did.
All right. Go me. All right. Well, cheers, boys.
Cheers, buddy.